Hello, what is up, everybody? Jack Farr here from Farr's Views Podcast, episode 12. We are Wednesday, the 30th of August, and it is 7 minutes to three. We're midst into the international break. Transfer window is coming to the close, and things are starting to heat up. The first thing I did want to talk about on today's podcast is how I got on with my predictions. I don't know if many of you remember, but maybe 2 or 3 weeks back, I made some season predictions, season table, top scorers. Let me have a look, actually, what of all the stuff I had. So I had the league table, top scorer, top assist, player of the year, best attack, best defence, player to have a breakout year and prove the doubters wrong, player to struggle, the surprise team of the year, the fall from grace team, the breakout stars to look out for, sacking predictions, best and worst summer signings. So I really kind of did a proper kind of breakdown and prediction section for the entire podcast. And I'm just going to go through a couple of those now and look at them and see which ones I have wrong and see if any of them actually need to be commented upon. Don't get me wrong, some of them like best transfer or flop transfer, etc., we've had 3 game weeks, and I'm not going to read too much into the performances over 3 game weeks, but there are certainly some areas which I will look at and either pat myself on the back or grossly apologise and say that I kind of messed that one up and it was a stupid prediction. So, first of all, I looked at the Player of the Year, and probably for the third year running, I had Kevin De Bruyne as my Player of the Year. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, this could still come true, but I thought he'd be a real centrepiece to this Pep Guardiola attack going forward. And I think he is, but I don't think he's going to be the main man as maybe lots of people expected him to be. And unfortunately, I wonder if Kevin De Bruyne will ever be Player of the Year caliber of player. He'll always be a great player, but I wonder if he will ever break out into those upper echelons, player of the Year caliber. So maybe trying to hold on to something that may never happen, that I always think will happen. But do I think Kevin De Bruyne will end as Player of the Year? Probably not. So maybe a bit of a mistake there on that one. Second one, I made my bold take, my hot take, that Arsenal may win the league. And yes, of course, that sounds absolutely crazy now, based on the position they're in. Big loss to Liverpool, lost to Stoke. And I believe they only have 3 points that they got off Leicester in a game that really they didn't deserve to win. So, I know I explained this in the last podcast, but I did just want to explain that I saw Arsenal as a team who had gone through so much with a manager, with their players, criticism from pundits, media, fans, that I thought they'd come through the other side really hardened, with a real attitude, and they'd really come and kind of school everybody. They finally signed a really top-class striker who they failed to play in the Liverpool game. Don't know why that was. You need goals, and you've got Lacazette on the bench. Okay, cool. So that was very strange. You've got a pretty settled defence, or what was a pretty settled defence, in my opinion. Kolasinac, Koscielny, Mustafi and Bellerin. Now, Bellerin's playing on the other flank. Mustafi's supposedly going to leave on loan to Inter Milan. Kolasinac didn't even play against Liverpool. So I think the difference here is I put myself in the shoes of being the Arsenal manager and what I would do and the team that I would play and the way that I would go about things. And I didn't take into account the effect that Wenger making these very strange decisions and changes would actually have. So I still stand by the fact that I think that Arsenal could potentially win the league, or could have potentially won the league. I know we're only 3 games in, but you've got to say the way in which they're playing, and now the players who are looking to leave, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Sanchez, etc., that actually it's really not looking good at all. Like I say, if I was in charge, and I'm not trying to give myself any sort of credit here or any sort of capability of doing that, and I think it's fair to say that any fan or even neutral watcher of football can see that a couple of Arsene Wenger's decisions that he's made are really not very good. And you wonder the different position that they would be in if he was a little bit smarter in his decision making. But yes, I can hold my hands up for that one. I'm pretty sure that's a tenner gone down the drain. With Arsenal winning the league at 12-1, it now actually looks pretty ridiculous, and I should have maybe bet on that if they were like maybe 50-1. But yes, so Arsenal potentially winning the league. I think I had them second in my overall table. Yeah, I had them second in my overall table, but I did have them potentially as winners of the league, and there's no way I see that now. And what may happen to Wenger over the course of the year, you know, we talk about it every January, every February with Arsenal fans, Wenger out. We're three games in and we're already there. And I think this year it is different. And I know that many people may say, well, yeah, every year they say it's going to be different. This year has not followed the pattern of previous years. From the get-go, Arsene Wenger is under immediate pressure, and I don't see them coming out of this very well. And if the ego of Stan Kroenke, or even Gazidis, or whoever's making the decisions there, or Arsene Wenger himself, if they're not willing to let him step aside and let somebody else take the reins, then I don't see Arsenal even really making the top six, if I'm honest with you. And their only hope of making this a reasonable enough season is going to be doing the Manchester United thing to do, which is coming outside of the top four but winning the Europa League. And that will not be an easy thing to do this year. There are some serious teams in the Europa League who will see maybe the success that United have had and will think to themselves, right, if I can't qualify domestically, then all my eggs are going into that one basket. Now, I can already hear minds worrying, or maybe people verbally saying to me that, well, who's going to replace him then? And I'm sure you expect me to say Thomas Tuchel or any of these kind of guys. But honestly, I think any sort of change, any sort of philosophy change, is going to be different and better for that football club. I watched the debate with Jamie Redknapp and Ian Wright last night on Sky Sports, and one thing I found very interesting was that Ian Wright said that when they were 2-0 up at half-time and they'd get chewed out by George Graham, that they'd be thinking, well, what the fuck's going on here? And then they'd go on and win the game more. Then Arsene Wenger came in, and it was a real kind of explaining the player, making the player understand, and getting their motivation to come from the fact that they're smarter than the opposition, as opposed to kind of firing them up and making it emotional. It's more composed and more Arsene Wenger-like in their approach. And I think what Ian Wright was trying to say was that he had, and that team that he was a part of, that great Arsenal team that he was a part of, had the kick up the backside that maybe is lacking in the current Arsenal team. Now, you've got to wonder, and I know that it's been said a lot, Thierry Henry said it recently as well, it's the comfort, they're too comfortable. You live in London, you get paid a load of money, you have a beautiful wife, you have a beautiful girlfriend, you go out and you have nice meals, and you hang out with your friends in your lovely houses, in your fantastic cars, and you do this, and you do this, and you do this. And actually, the ability to knuckle down, work hard, and grind out a result, and show that you're working hard, is totally gone from that team, because they no longer respect or fear Arsene Wenger, is what I would say. So yes, tricky times at Arsenal. I was way wrong with that. Kind of went off on a little bit of a breakdown there, but I really don't see how that's going to improve or change in the coming months. I mean, it's, you know, deadline day is tomorrow. do I see them signing Giorgio Chiellini, Kevin Strootman, Ivan Perisic, and, you know, do I see that stuff happening? No, I don't. So I think that Arsenal are in serious trouble, and if they can't walk over the smaller teams like they usually do, they're going to be in real trouble this year against the big teams. And that, coupled with draws against maybe the smaller teams away from home, they're going to be in real trouble. My next thing that I was spot on about was Victor Lindelof. Lots of United fans very, very hopeful that he would jump straight in next to Eric Bailly. Watching him in pre-season, listening to Jose Mourinho's comments, I was very excited when he signed because I think he has the potential to be an absolutely superb centre-back, really, really good. But I think that certainly from the underwhelming side of things, he hasn't even made the bench for a game yet. So you talk about underwhelming. Try a player who hasn't even featured. So yet again, time will tell. He may come into things. I read a rumor somewhere that due to the fact that Jones and Bailly are, of course, both injured for the Champions League first game, that we'll have a pairing of Lindelof and Smalling for the first Champions League game. Then we may see him there, and depending on how well he plays, he may start to, you know, kind of edge his way into the Premier League side. But we are seeing Phil Jones play the best football of his life at the moment, and I don't know if Mourinho is going to want to change that by putting Lindelof in. So yeah, so far he's not really lived up to it. Okay, so moving on, I did just want to move on to another bit. I did a little bit of digging, a little bit of research. I'm just going to have a sip of my drink here. Just want to look into how quickly things can change in football. So Chelsea lose their first game of the year. They have two red cards. Their captain, inside of, 15, 20 minutes, 23 minutes maybe. And then they lose a central midfielder, of which they don't have very many, and they keep loaning out or selling all their other ones. And I just wanted to look at Chelsea and the way in which they've spent their transfer window. So we've got Ethan Ampadu from Exeter City on a free. Presumably, I don't know that player, but presumably that's a young player who they'll put into the under-18s or the under-21s and just see how they go. Willy Caballero, they lost, of course, Begovic to Bournemouth, so they needed a backup keeper, and Willy Caballero is a very reasonable backup goalkeeper. Rudiger came in, who's a very good player, 29 mil, good value for money there. Bakayoko came in for about 40 million from Monaco, and he's looked really good, especially in their most what game did they have? In the Spurs game, he looked really strong. And then Alvaro Morata as well. Of course, 58 million from Real Madrid, and you know, hasn't he done well thus far with not much of a preseason behind him and not that much fitness. Now, I would go through all the outs. So just to be clear there, sorry, that was five players have come in. Now, with the outs, I would go through each one, but this might be a 50-hour podcast. So, Chelsea, including loans, Chelsea have 35 total outs. So I just want to let you kind of process that for a second. They've brought five players in, and 35 have left the football club. Now, I don't pretend to know whether the club that they're being loaned to is paying the wages of the player, or whether Chelsea are still paying the wages. I don't know whether Chelsea are getting any money from, like, a monthly fee from Swansea for Tammy Abraham, or, you know, these kind of things. But what I see there is a complete difference from all other clubs. Complete difference. 35 is a crazy amount. The other thing I want to look at is that 24 of those 35 outs that Chelsea have are loan deals. A Premier League squad size maximum, apart from players under a certain age, is 25. So Chelsea don't just have a few youth players going out, like maybe five or six. They have basically a squad's worth of players who are leaving the club. So there's basically a second pool that they're looking from. So I think what they're kind of trying to do is defeat high fees being paid for young prospective talent by signing them cheap and very young and letting them prosper in other football clubs. And then instead of having to pay through the nose for them in the current market to sign a young prospect, they're just saying, well, we'll just bring them back from loan because we already have them. I just want to go through some of the names of the players who've been loaned out. So Fankate Darbo, never heard of him. He's a Vitesse Arnhem. Tammy Abraham, of course, is playing fantastically well at Swansea. Casey Palmer's gone to Huddersfield. Todd Kane, Charlie Colkit, Bradley Collins, Ola Ina, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, Lucas Pierthon, Marco van Ginkel, Ike Ugbo, Kurt Zouma has even been loaned, Jay De Silva, Mason Mount, Izzy Brown, Thomas Callas, Michael Hector, Jamal Blackman, Matt Miazga, Victorian Angban, Mario Pasalic, Lewis Baker, Kenneth Omeruo, I think is how you pronounce that, and Jeremy Boga has gone to Birmingham. So that really does kind of show you that there's no young youth coaching going on at Chelsea. There is no, it's what I would call, I think, cheating development. There's no youth, actual proper youth coaching going on there. They're not kind of trying to bring these players up and train with the first team squad, give them a couple minutes and then see how they fare. They're loaning them out, hoping that they have massive years and then bring them back to the club. The one thing I would say about all of this as well, and talking about how, so I did some very basic maths on this as well, 68.5% of Chelsea's 35 outs are on loan. So that's over two-thirds of the players that they have leaving the club have gone on loan. How many Chelsea players that go on loan all the time have come back and really kind of made an impact into the squad? Because to me, I mean, I think Victor Moses went out on loan. He's been pretty good. But speaking to Chelsea fans and, you know, seeing on Twitter, the one person that Chelsea want to replace in the starting lineup is Victor Moses. So is he made that much of an impact? The rest of the team, you do kind of look at it. I mean, Courtois is probably a good example of somebody who was bought, loaned out for 2 or 3 years, come back and made a good stint of things. But apart from that, we really are looking thin. So yes, in terms of looking at it from just purely looking at it objectively as a policy, is it effective? I would say that based on the amount of money spent signing this squad, this mini backup squad of players, and the amount of wages that collectively these 24 players going out on loan would have been, you do kind of look at it and think, well, actually, Victor Moses, who people don't really want, Courtois, who, okay, is a good keeper but isn't exceptional. Is this working and is this beneficial for you? I would probably say no, and I think Chelsea maybe need to look at that and change the way they try to bring young players into their club. They really do have a very special generation of players coming through their academy right now, and they need to make sure that they are used correctly, or else they're going to be in serious, serious trouble. Dominic Solanke, I think, will be good. Free agent, released. Nathan Ake sold to Bournemouth. The fact they recalled him and then didn't play him infuriates me. Tammy Abraham has looked good. Ruben Loftus-Cheek, they need to deal with very, very well. Nathaniel Shalabar's looked really, really good at Watford. The list goes on. These names need to be used effectively or there's no point at all. So, on after that kind of negative of just looking at those loans and you know, what I would consider an abuse of the loan system, you're only allowed to loan one player per club unless you do have a kind of agreement with them. So Chelsea always have the joke with you always have the joke with Vitesse Arnhem. But yeah, anyway. But my point of bringing up Chelsea was the fact of how quickly things can change. So yeah, their first game, Fabregas sent off, Cahill sent off, they lose to Burnley at home, that shouldn't happen. But then, actually, you beat Spurs, you then beat whoever they beat most recently, I forget who that was, who they played recently, bear with me a second. Morata played a key part. They played Everton, beat Everton. Everton are a very reasonable opponent. And then you start to look at the fact that, okay, they lost at home to Burnley. That's one blip. But since then, they've beaten and kept a clean sheet against Spurs away from home, against Everton at home. Eden Hazard will return within a few weeks fully fit. More players will probably come in before the deadline day. There's all this talk about Oxlade-Chamberlain and, you know, a bunch of other players they're trying to sign. Their captain will return from suspension. Bakayoko will get fitter and be at his best. And as Morata gets fitter, he'll only get better. And what you start to look at with Chelsea is, after they were beaten, first of all, and all this discontent with Conte, is he going to leave? Why would you sell Matic to Manchester United? How foolish. Now, Cahill and Fabregas are sent off. Bakayoko's not fit and he's going to have to start against Spurs at Wembley. That's going to be tough. They've come the other side of that. And actually, with the next couple of weeks coming through, things are just going to get better and better for them. And it's very, very interesting how quickly things can change in football and the positive spin that you can have on things. I still think it's very telling that Antonio Conte took a pay rise, but not an increase in contract length. But regardless, I still think that Chelsea will be very, very tough to beat this year. And initially I had them, you know, maybe not doing as well as I would have thought initially. But now I'd certainly say, if I was doing a Premier League table again, Chelsea, I wouldn't have them at sixth anymore. I'd say you're probably pushing them into the top four, maybe fourth, maybe third. I just wanted to touch on that and just say how quickly things in football can change, and what Chelsea have got in their timeline going forward looks very, very promising. And then finally, the last thing I wanted to talk about was the bear with me a moment. Was the last thing, obviously, I wanted to talk about, I know we've still got the window to come pretty soon, but is the confirmed transfers. So we'll start with the most boring one first. Sam Clucas has gone from Hull to Swansea for an undisclosed fee. Who fucking cares? Is that going to benefit Swansea and change Swansea from probably going to be in a relegation battle this year? No. Next. Gazzaniga has moved from Saints to Spurs yet again. Really weird. I'm sure he's a reasonable backup. He's played Premier League games. He's been around the block. He's a good professional. But whatever. Abdelhamid Sabiri from Nuremberg to Huddersfield. I've got to be honest. I don't know this player. I'm sure that having the numbers through the door for Huddersfield is a good thing. And obviously they've made a great start to the season. I would say that based on their model, certainly in terms of their scouting and their development as a football club going forward, it wouldn't surprise me if this was a really good signing, even though I have no idea who the player is. Next is Davinson Sanchez from Ajax to Tottenham. Yet again, you're no fool if you sign a player who's come through the Ajax Academy. I'm very, very close to saying the Ajax Academy is probably the best in the world. It probably isn't, but I'm very close to saying that it is. Basically, any player who comes through the Academy and then plays first team football for Ajax will be a serious player. You know, and I mean, Christian Eriksen, Jan Vertonghen, you know, and obviously those are Spurs players, so that connection continues. This is good from a standpoint of Alderweireld goes down with an injury, Vertonghen goes down with an injury, etc., etc. He can come in and do much the same job as those guys can. So he's athletic, he's good with his feet, he's young. I'm sure he'll be the successor to Vertonghen, should the time come. The one thing I'm worried about with that transfer is, as I'll get to a little bit later, Kevin Vimmer was signed to play that role. So that replacement role, if the injury were to happen. And then, really, Vertonghen and Alderweireld were in pretty good shape throughout the time that he was there, which limited his playing time, ultimately led him to being unhappy, hence why he's left. I hope that doesn't repeat itself with Davinson Sanchez, because he is a good player. Moving on, we have, God, wish me luck, Florent Hader-Jonaj from Ingolstadt to Huddersfield on loan. Yet again, another Bundesliga pickup for Huddersfield. Much like I stated before, don't know the player, but I would say that based on their system and their scheme and the way that they've got things going there, that would be a pretty impressive signing, I would assume. Next, I'm sure that everyone knew this has been happening for a little while. Zlatan Ibrahimovic has gone from unattached, quote unquote unattached, to Manchester United for one more year. It's a really good, it's a really smart signing. It works for Zlatan, he still gets paid a load of money. It works for Mourinho. Yet again, that benefit that everyone talked about with Zlatan last year, the benefit for Rashford, now for Lukaku, Martial, is there. Mourinho makes a very, very good point. Come November, December, January, whenever it is that he does come back and everyone's searching for that player who can be the difference maker, hopefully Manchester United will get out of their group in the Champions League, and then Zlatan Ibrahimovic comes in to cause a bit of trouble. Failing that as well, if Mourinho wants to save Lukaku for a Champions League game, Zlatan plays in the league, and we know that he can be effective in the league, as shown by last year. So very smart signing. Yet again, anybody signing Zlatan Ibrahimovic, regardless of his age, on a free transfer, is always going to be good. And don't get me wrong, I know the wages are big, but Rooney's gone now. Everything's okay. Next, Oliver Burke has gone from Leipzig to West Brom. I'm really, really pleased with this transfer, actually. This shows that a British player can go abroad, have very reasonable success, and then come back, hopefully a better and more rounded player. We've seen that with Eric Dier, and you know, hopefully we're going to see that with Oliver Burke as well. Gareth Bale, I mean, obviously he was always going to reach superstardom at some point, but yet again it reinforces the point that even though the money's here and your family's here and the language that you speak, blah 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 blah, the amount of players who I'm sure will be incredibly successful if they go abroad to really further themselves would be much, much higher, significantly higher than what you'd expect. It's what I want of Jack Wilshere now. You know, these kinds of players, Ross Barkley, these kinds of players who are lost in the swing of things a little bit, go abroad, earn a little bit less money, but play first team football, absorb a different culture, become a better player, come back and absolutely tear it up. So proud of him for doing that, and for West Brom, for that price, I believe it was about 15 mil, 18 mil, that's not bad at all in the current market. Ousmane Dembele, Neymar Mark II, is the replacement from Borussia Dortmund to Barcelona. £96.8 million up front, rising to £135.5 million based on, you would assume, goals, appearances, assists and winning things. Now, what's funny is when a player signs for a club and it's the club get paid bonuses on whether they win things or not, you usually think, oh, well, that's not going to fucking happen, is it? Barcelona, on the other hand, chances of them winning a cup, scoring goals, assists, etc., etc., is really high. So you'd wonder if the big incentives for that rising two deal is the league, if they kind of beat Real Madrid to that, or the Champions League. Yet again, I don't see it happening. Real Madrid are, you know, really now, I would say, a standout as the best team in the world at the moment. You know my opinion on Cristiano Ronaldo as the greatest of all time. I still maintain that. And next on the list is Sim de Jong, has gone from Newcastle to Ajax. I think that's a really good move for him back in Amsterdam. He's a Dutch player as well, and I think that he'll get on well with the coach. And I think, yeah, like I say, I think that'll work well for him. For £4 million, it's really good business for Ajax, really. Next, moving on to somebody who I obviously spoke about a second ago, Kevin Vimmer has gone from Tottenham to Stoke. I won't repeat myself too much, but whenever you are a third or fourth string player at a club, so whether you're a Vincent Janssen at Tottenham or you're a Chris Smalling at Manchester United, if you don't get any playing time and you really are a good person who wants to play football, that will eventually be infuriating to you and you'll want to leave. And that's perfectly expected. So I think that's good for him, and well done to Stoke for picking him up. Stefan Jovetic has gone from Inter to Monaco, which I think is a really good deal. I think we'll expect Kylian Mbappe to go to PSG, probably initially as a loan, which kind of baffles me. I'm sure that's just to avoid financial fair play restrictions. But yes, Jovetic from Inter to Monaco. Balde Keita has also gone from Lazio to Monaco. He was a highly sought after player, has also gone to Monaco. And the reason why I've coupled these two together is what I'm starting to see is Monaco are starting to do business like Borussia Dortmund, and there are really nice similarities between the two teams. You've got Monaco, who came out with this fiery young attack, and what's happened is their team is just getting poached for the best players, as you'd expect, because the best players want to play for the best teams. But these replacements that they're bringing in are superb. So we look at that already. Jovetic, Balde Keita, Yuri Tielemans. And you're starting to actually see the way in which Monaco are going to do their business. They've still got hold of Thomas Lemar. And, you know, Fabinho, Djibril Sidibe. And you would imagine that this will just continue for a couple of years. They'll do well in Liga. And when they bring a player through, they'll sell him for a load of money. And fingers crossed, they won't get caught in the fray like Dortmund apparently have now. Next, Kieran Gibbs has gone from Arsenal to West Brom for £7 million. Never really rated Kieran Gibbs. If he can become a better defender under Tony Pulis, then good for him. And athletically, he can get up and down the pitch. And if he can improve his crossing, it may prove to be a really, really good signing for West Brom. Next, and finally, Naby Keita. Not Balde Keita, Naby Keita. The fee has been agreed for next year. I believe there was a clause next year for him to leave Leipzig if he wanted to go to Liverpool. I think it's about 50 million or so that may rise to 60, based on some. I don't even know what the amount is. Compensation amount. I forget. Yet again, really good deal. The perfect kind of player you'd expect to be playing in a Jurgen Klopp team. His transition play is superb, and from absolutely nothing, he can create anything. He's probably the most unconventional central midfielder I've ever seen. But I think that he can create magic out of absolutely nowhere. And what you would assume, I think, is that somewhere in that three or four of Lallana, Wijnaldum, Chan, Henderson, one of those players is going to want to move on pretty soon. I think Emre Can is absolutely fucking fantastic and an absolute world beater. So it wouldn't surprise me if he heads off somewhere. Henderson, I think, is there for the long haul. Lallana as well. Maybe Wijnaldum decides to move on. But you can't spend all that money on Naby Keita and not play him. So I think we'll see some central midfielder moves for Liverpool pretty soon. Now, I'm doing this just before deadline day because the potential for lots of transfers on deadline day is obviously very high. So I'll do that one for next week. The one kind of little, I did a little bit of digging, a little bit of research. And the one thing that I did want to just share with everybody is as it stands today at 3:28 on the 30th of August, there have been 1,481 transfer deals in Europe's top five leagues this season so far. And the amount that's been spent so far is 3.66 billion, which is definitely a new record, and we've still got a deadline day to go. So plenty happening. Like I say, we're into the international break now. Ugh. But saying that, you know, the transfer window's closing up. It's going to be interesting to see the state of international teams after these kind of transfer dealings. And obviously, from an English point of view, Rooney retiring from English football. A few players going to be making their debut for England. And, you know, things are going to get more interesting as the days and weeks go by, especially regarding the transfer window and just generally regarding football. I do feel like the predictability aspect of football has gone way down, and that actually I don't really know what I'm looking at anymore. But saying that, it keeps it fun, it keeps it exciting. Thank you very, very, very much for listening. Yet again, I'm trying to keep it short on these podcasts here. I appreciate that I'm doing this on a Wednesday and not a Monday, as I've previously said I would. But, you know, it's just me, one take, no messing around. Please like, please share, please subscribe, please leave me a 5-star review. I'm always appreciative of any sort of feedback or constructive criticism. And if you do like it, yeah, give me a retweet, give me a subscribe. 5-star review, always very helpful. And I'm looking to, hopefully, we'll see, I go off to uni on September 9th to start my degree in international football business. And I would hope that over the course of my time there, I'll be able to get a few, hopefully, pretty important faces on the podcast. This may sound a bit strange, but even a lecturer. And I'll certainly be recording any guest speakers that I manage to actually speak to whilst I'm away. But yes, thank you very much for listening. And I'll chat to you next week.